welcome to the April 17th, 2018 morning session. I'm Rico Bishop. I'm pleased to be joined by Judge Francie Reedman on my left. And we welcome our newest judge, Larry Welch, who's on my right. So as we get started this morning, when I call your case, please come forward to the tables, and then I will call your case again for purposes of the live streaming on NETV. So as a reminder in that regard, please be careful and sensitive to any names that you may want to keep confidential, especially in like the juvenile case. All right, so let's go ahead and start. Our first case of the morning is State versus Smith. Again, the first case of the morning is State versus Smith. You may approach.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
My name is Eddie Rodell, and I represent the appellant in this matter. As the court's well aware, this is an appeal on a criminal case. We have three primary issues that we were addressing in our brief, and that was namely that we believe that there was prosecutorial misconduct, and in conjunction with that, that there was the trial counsel was ineffective in that they failed to object to the prosecutorial misconduct during trial, and then finally that the sentence that was imposed upon the appellant, Mr. Smith, was excessive. Addressing the issue of the prosecutorial misconduct first, there was actually a recent case that was just argued in front of the Nebraska Supreme Court just a few weeks ago, and that was State versus Desidero Hernandez. That was argued back on March 6th, and no decision has been reached on that particular case yet. That was found at S-17-235. In that particular case, the prosecutor, who was actually an assistant attorney general, was accused of making inflammatory comments to the jury during closing arguments, which is similar to this particular case. And essentially, the assistant attorney general was accused of inserting his own opinion as opposed to arguing the facts to the jury. Unlike this case, however, counsel for Hernandez did make a timely objection to the comments that were made during trial and asked for a mistrial. That, unfortunately, did not happen in this particular case. We do believe that the court can reach the issue of prosecutorial misconduct on plain error, but if for some reason that the court finds that you are unable to reach that on plain error, we would lead us into that second issue, which is ineffectiveness of counsel.
Counsel, just yes. For clarification, is it your position, in reading the record, it appears that counsel during closing arguments were making differing interpretations of the law?
I think it goes beyond differing interpretations of the law.
But your issue with the prosecutorial misconduct isn't that the prosecutor was arguing your client didn't have to intend the victim.
Correct.
That mistaken identity basically was a defense. That was your position.
That was Mr. Smith's position.
The state's position was mistaken identity is not a defense. Your issue with prosecutorial misconduct isn't that he was arguing that position, but rather that he attacked defense counsel personally as opposed to his position.
Correct. That's just one of several comments that were made during closing arguments that really served no purpose other than to, I guess the appropriate phrase would be, inflame the passions of the jury. It wasn't evidence that he was arguing. It was making such comments as referring to the crime that the appellant was being charged with as saying there's no defense for him, that this is such a heinous act that you don't want to address it and you're not going to admit it, and he doesn't. And then going on and saying that comment about it doesn't surprise me that when the defendant comes in here and works to mislead the jury that his attorney would do the same thing. And what we have a problem with, Your Honor, is that that's a personal attack on opposing counsel in front of the jury.
So we don't need to reach the issue of which side's interpretation of the law was correct, do we?
Correct. That was not argued in the brief.
Okay.
Even if we find that some of the statements made were improper, what would be the prejudice to your client? For example, if we consider the factors that have been set out in State v. DeBray, where would you say that we could find prejudice?
Well, I believe it's more than harmless error. In fact, the state admits in their brief that the comment, the direct attack on opposing counsel was improper, and there's no excuse for that. So I believe it rises above harmless error. We're looking at Nemaha County, which is a small county, where everybody knows everybody. That you've got the public defender representing the defendant on this, and you've got the assistant county attorney representing the state in this matter. And again, in a small county, everybody knows that everybody. Both these people are elected officials. And here you have somebody, a representative of the government, impugning the character or the veracity of the public defender to basically a small town jury.
Is there any authority that would support creating that distinction between a small town jury and
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to find any, but I'm just trying to draw the difference between what we're looking at, for example, if it was here in Lancaster County or Douglas County for that matter.
But even if we were to agree that some of the comments were improper and constituted prosecutorial misconduct, then we have to look to the prejudice. And what's the prejudice to your client?
Well, I believe that the comments were sufficient enough to kind of almost enrage the jury against the defendant, to turn the jury against the defendant by classifying the assault that he's accused of as a heinous act, or trying to personalize the victim by referring to the fact that this isn't something she should have to deal with. Instead, she should be learning how to do her locker combination or things like that, trying to essentially turn the jury against the defendant rather than just focusing on the facts of the case that were presented at trial.
The facts were pretty clear-cut, though. I mean, it wasn't disputed that he engaged in the contact.
No. He admitted it from day one, and his only defense was as mistake of identity.
Which the jury could choose to believe or not believe.
That's correct. But with these comments on top of the evidence, I think that could be sufficient to push it over the top.
It hurts his credibility.
Correct.
Did he testify?
He did not testify. But his statements came into record through his interviews with law enforcement. In the remaining time I have, I want to focus on the sentence that was imposed upon Mr. Smith. The court imposed a 2-year sentence upon Mr. Smith. This is a gentleman that, according to the statements made at the time of sentencing, very little criminal record. All he had on his record was a trespass charge, and that he was seeking probation. And according to the statements that were made during the course of the sentencing, he scored very low as a low risk to reoffend in virtually all categories except one, in which he was a medium risk to reoffend. And that we believe that the appropriate sentence at the time would have been a term of probation rather than a term of incarceration of 2 years. So we're asking the court to address that issue as well. We believe that in looking at Mr. Smith's background as well as what was available to the court in evaluating Mr. Smith, that the term of incarceration of 2 years was not the appropriate sentence available to, or not the appropriate sentence that the court should have imposed upon him. With that being said, I would reserve my remaining minute.
Before you sit down, I just want to, did you say that Mr. Smith did not testify?
I don't.
I believe he did testify. According to the Bill of Exceptions, he did.
Okay, I may have been mistaken.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. Your Honors, there were two comments that were discussed in the defendant's brief that were assigned as prosecutorial misconduct. The first is not, the second is more problematic. The first one
has four. Well, he assigned four, but he only actually discussed two. And per the longstanding rules, that means those are the only ones that are actually before this court. The first one is prosecutor's comment, did he do it for sexual gratification? Yes, he did. He tells us he was doing it for sexual gratification. Those words precisely did not fall out of his mouth, but they are exactly a completely rational conclusion based on the defense. The defense was not, I was not doing it for sexual gratification. The defense was, I thought it was my girlfriend I was groping up, not an 11-year-old daughter. So, obviously, it was for sexual gratification. His defense was just basically mistaken identity, and the jury took half an hour to say, no, don't think so. The second one is more problematic. That was the one where the prosecutor said, it doesn't particularly surprise me when Mr. Smith comes in here and wants to mislead the jury, and that his attorney would do the same. I think that is an improper remark, and from that point, we need to go on to determine whether or not it was prejudicial. To show prejudice, he needs to show that, had the remark been objected to, and that factors into his ineffective assistance of counsel claim, that the result of the proceeding would have been different. The result of the proceeding would not have been different, whether the remark was not made at all, whether it had been objected to, whatever. The state promptly went on to discuss the evidence and the elements of the offense after making that statement. It simply didn't prejudice him. The defense was just goofy. And the jury properly saw it for what it was and rejected his defense. And whether the statement had been made or not been made, the result of the trial would have been exactly the same. He would have been convicted. So I don't think that while the remark was improper, as you go through and look at whether or not in the totality of the trial, it prejudiced him, it clearly did not.
Are you aware of any authority that would suggest there's a distinction between a rural jury and an urban jury, and that should factor into the equation?
I am not, Your Honor. And if we're going to have uniform rules of law in the state, then, frankly, it shouldn't make a difference. And if they're going to be uniform, it can't make a difference. The victims, if we're talking about who's well-known and who isn't, the victims were apparently not well-known in the county. They had just recently moved there from someplace else and apparently weren't known at all. So, if you're going to talk about who's known and who isn't, you've got to look at everyone, I guess. And I don't think in the long run, and in the short run, it should make any difference whether it's rural, urban, somewhere in between.
To reach the issue of prosecutorial misconduct, I'll ask you the same question. Differing interpretations of the law were argued by both sides, one that mistaken identity was a defense, another that it was not. Do we need to reach that issue in order to determine the prosecutorial misconduct?
No, I don't think so. I think the question is simply whether or not the state proved up its case, and the jury considered his defense and rightfully rejected it. And again, whether or not these statements had been made or objected to, it wouldn't have made any difference. The evidence was what the evidence was, and it wasn't enough for a jury to be convinced that he didn't know who it was that was the object of his affections at that point in time. Your Honors, I think we've addressed the sentencing issue. Unless you have particular questions about that, we would ask that the judgment and sentence be affirmed.
Okay, thank you
very
much.
How much
time does Mr.
Redo
have for rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a few quick ones. One is, we don't know if it would have made a difference or not. The jury would have ruled differently. And that's the problem here. There was no repeat by the court, no curative statement made by the judge. And there was no objection made by counsel. Instead, the most severe of the four statements that we talked about, in that was on rebuttal during closing, left an imprint on the jury with defense counsel not having an opportunity to mitigate that statement whatsoever, and that was essentially the statement that the jury was left with when they were allowed to begin their deliberations. And again, without the curative statements or mitigated by the court, directing the jury to disregard that statement, and with no objection made by defense counsel, we just don't know whether or not it would make a difference with the jury whether that influenced their decision whatsoever.
Do you think that when the court instructs the jury to consider only the facts, the evidence of the case, and not counsel's comments, that that has not cured the issue?
I think it cured the statement immediately after that was made. Would have been more effective than just that type of statement in the jury instructions, yes.
Thank you.
One call, if mistake of fact is not a defense here, there's no prejudice to the argument, correct?
That argument is not made. It was not addressed.
And you're not making that argument, no?
I am not.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Matter submitted. Thank you.